News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We're going back to the phones right now with a guest that I'm glad that we were able to coordinate with and get on for the day, Mike Durant. Many of you know who Mike Durant is here in the listening area. He has got 22 years of military experience as an aviator, master aviator, flew with the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, and he's also known not just for his personal service, but for participating in the Battle of Mogadishu, in which we often refer to it as Black Hawk Down. And throughout his career, Mike has earned the Distinguished Service Medal, the Distinguished Flying Cross, the Bronze Star with Valor Device, the Purple Heart, retired as a Chief Warrant Officer 4, formed Pinnacle Solutions, for which he is the CEO in the Huntsville area, and has a MBA in Aviation Management from Embry-Riddle, and is now running for the U.S. Senate. Mike Durant, thanks for coming on, man, and thank you for your service to this country.
Hey, Phil, great to be on, and you as well.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Well, listen, Mike, I've spent a lot of today's show just literally focusing on Veterans Day. I don't know if you've heard any of it, but I've been reading out citations for Alabama Medal of Honor winners. I've been spending time talking to other candidates who are also veterans. You've got an amazing career, and I think part of your perspective, having been held as a prisoner of war in Mogadishu, probably gives you some other unique perspectives. But talk to us for a minute just about how you decided to even join the military in the first place and your thoughts on Veterans Day.
Sure, absolutely. So the motivation for me was really somewhat self-serving. I hate to admit it, but I wanted to fly. That was the bottom line. And the Army had a program that I'm sure many current Army aviators, found their way into the cockpit through this same program, where you essentially can go right to flight school as soon as you got in the Army. And it didn't quite work out that way for me, but I had to wait a couple of years and then I went. And, you know, it's just one example of the many opportunities that are available to people who do join the military. And I'm blessed to be able to say that, you know, what I wanted to do, I ultimately achieved. And then, you know, as you mentioned earlier, going to the 160th took it to a whole new level.
Well, it did. And for those who don't know, the 160th is the Special Operations Aviation Regiment. It is the those are the guys that fly our Rangers and Special Forces and SEALs in on clandestine missions and go places that most aviators don't ever get to go. And a lot of times you're flying by night. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty typical of the whole Army these days. It's not really unique to the 160th anymore, but we certainly pioneered it. And it was all sort of coming to life when I started flying. So got in on the early stages of all that. And, in terms of the capability that ultimately got fielded and what's out there today, it's a tremendous advantage on the battlefield for sure when you have the opportunity to choose the time of day in which you fight, which obviously when you have the technology, you want to do it at night.
Well, Mike, today's Veterans Day, like we said when you first came on, and like I've been talking about for the last couple of hours, but being Veterans Day, of course, Memorial Day, we remember those who have gone before us, and then Veterans Day, we talk to the ones who kind of are still here and celebrate them. Give me your thoughts on just Veterans Day in general. You as a veteran, but the fact that you've also folks that I'm sure you served with who you probably maintain contact with, just give us a few random thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mentioned this stay in contact with, because one of the things that I often talk about to people who have never been in the military is how close we all are and were, certainly at the time that we served together. And I think that's something people look for and don't always find in their professional lives, because it's just not the same. But if you've served in a military unit, certainly in one that went to combat, those relationships, you know, there's a reason they call it Band of Brothers. There's, you know, that wasn't just a name that they picked out of the air. It's what it is. You're essentially family. And after you leave the military, most people remain in touch with the folks that they served with, you know, if not throughout their whole career, in the parts of their career that meant the most to them. And I'm still in touch with a lot of the folks that I flew with. In fact, I have the honor of being the escort for one of my very good friends right here in Huntsville next Tuesday night, who's going to be inducted in the Army Aviation Association of America Hall of Fame. And I'm his escort. And we stayed in touch along with many others over the years, because we just, you know, we were so close at one time.
Well, very cool. And And so let me ask you this. I asked Casey Wardinski was on earlier, and I asked him the same question. In your career, 2 decades plus, was there any one person or persons who became like a mentor, someone who you're glad to have served under, who you still think back on as someone who taught you things that you carry with you today?
So I hate to pick one person, but I will say that I've always felt I had the amazing opportunity to work for a tremendous number of amazing leaders throughout my primarily aviation career. I did spend a little bit of time in the Army before I went to flight school. But the ones that come to mind most are once I got into the 160th, and many of these ended up, you know, making it all the way to four-star general. So, you know, to be able to work with leaders who are still early on in their career that are such great leaders, they're selected, you know, to serve at that kind of level, is a unique opportunity. And, you know, I can't say I call them friends, but I certainly know several of them and have seen their careers progress. You know, one in particular, I always tell the story. I was a W-3, and he was I think, lieutenant colonel, and we were working on this operation down at Fort Bragg. And then when I made W-4, I looked at his progression, and he was already either a 3-star or a 4-star general. So, I mean, this guy was, you know, just an incredible leader. And having had the chance to see those people at the tactical level, because, you know, to me, that's where leadership really matters. That's where the rubber meets the road. And, you know, to see how they behave and see what was important to them and see how they talk to their troops and how people just automatically wanted to follow them because they trusted them. They knew they were people of integrity. They knew they cared about the people that they led. You know, all those things that those of us who have been with great leaders recognize as attributes of those leaders. I was surrounded by them my whole career, and I really feel like it set me up for success both in the Army and then, you know, as a business leader in the aftermath. And certainly with my, you know, run for the Senate, I feel like it's a tremendous experience to be able to take to that role.
Well, and it's a great segue. So let's take just the last few minutes we got here. We got about 4 minutes. And so you are pursuing a race for the U.S. Senate. You know, some polls have come out lately that showed that you jumped in and automatically obliterated two of the other candidates, and that you are you're a viable candidate. I think everybody expected that up front, but the polling is beginning to show that too. That being said, what is it about your time in the military that you think prepares you best to go to the U.S. Senate? What do you carry with you because of your time and 22 years of service?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is obviously foreign policy, how our military is utilized in support of foreign policy measures. You know, you think about Afghanistan, how horribly bad that was managed.
Yeah.
Any of us who have ever served have just been infuriated by the whole thing. And for me, I really saw it once before because something very similar happened to us in Somalia. And I think what people who don't have military experience don't appreciate is the sacrifice that our soldiers, sailors, Airmen, Marines, Coast Guardsmen make, and then the impact on their families, whether it's because they're, you know, they're separated for long periods of time, or in a worst case scenario, you know, their family members wounded or has lost their life. And I was there when the Secretary of Defense at the time, Les Aspin, who no one thought was a big fan of the military, walked into the room at a memorial ceremony at Fort Bragg. And I think for the first time he realized these are not pawns in a game. These are people. And if you've been there when the boots and the weapons and the helmets are there representing the fallen and you see their families, it finally comes home that this is real. There are high stakes here, and we got to handle this very, very deliberately and understand the implications of our foreign policy decisions. And that's just the beginning of it. I mean, you add to that the leadership, the experience, you know, having lived in the real world instead of being a career politician, I think those are all significant discriminators when it comes to serving in a political role.
Well, and I agree with every bit of what you just said, you know, and I think one of the things that's very interesting too is the perspective that you're going to bring in terms of work ethic. Not to say that you have to have been in the military to develop a work ethic, but sometimes it's a different work ethic. Like, longer hours don't mean anything as much as they do to someone who hasn't had to serve those kind of long hours. I do remember being on the state Senate floor looking at going well past midnight into the wee hours of the night, working on bills because we weren't going to adjourn. And Bill Holtzclaw, who lives here in the area too, served in the Marine Corps. He and I would sit there, and it didn't mean anything to us, and everybody else was complaining and wanting to go home. And I just say that almost tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, I think you bring sort of a stick-to-itiveness from your time in service, I would imagine, that not everybody can say that they have earned along the way.
Well, you're right. I mean, we all learn that you have to commit to the mission and, you know, whatever that takes. We used to joke around, you know, we're on half-day schedules. We only had to work 12 hours. You know, it's sort of a joke, but it's real. I mean, you do what it takes to get the job done.
Well, and that's perfect. And you said it better than I did because I almost sounded prideful saying it. But Mike Durant, appreciate you being on today. And thank you for jumping in there and giving us your perspective on Veterans Day and on the role that you're playing as a veteran heading towards the U.S. Senate. So thanks for your time and thanks for your service.
Thank you, Phil. You as well.
Absolutely. All right, Kelsey, I know y'all switched off here. Go ahead and take us towards that short break. We'll do that. That was Mike Durant, by the way, running for U.S. Senate. Polls just came out, show that he jumped in at 12 points. Wow, that's a huge spread from being 0 to 12 points in a matter of weeks. We'll see where that leads the campaign. He is certainly a viable candidate on day one. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Veterans Day. We'll be right back.